I'm Dr. Lindsay Ackerman.
And I'm Dr. Chris Bunick. And together, we're the co-host of ABCs in Dermatology, a brand new monthly podcast from HCP Live.
Each month, we break down the latest clinical updates, emerging therapies, and evidence-based insights across dermatology, all in a format designed to fit your schedule.
Whether you're in academic medicine, private practice, or anywhere in between, this podcast was built with you in mind.
ABCs in Dermatology is available now on all major podcast platforms. Search for ABCs in Dermatology. Subscribe and join us every month.
Hi, Lindsay.
Hey, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Likewise.
Let's dive right in and let's figure out what made you interested in being a part of this ABCs in Dermatology podcast.
Well, I was approached by HCP Live and said, you know, the question was, would you be willing to do a Bunick Ackerman type podcast? And I thought, Chris is kind of awesome. He's super kind. And, you know, truly, and I say this to you, and I mean this very, very holistically, you're a good person that always just has something really worthy to share. So for me, with HCP Live's great programming and the opportunity to work with you, it was kind of a no-brainer.
Well, I really like hearing that. I know that we are working together on an HCP Live program, and we really get along well. We have great chemistry, and there's a calming spirit about you that I always like to be around. Mm. And I can't think of anyone better to work with and do this podcast with.
Thanks so much, Chris. This is exciting.
Why did you feel this might be the right opportunity for you at this point in your career?
I am nearly 20 years into my career post-residency, and yet I still feel as avid about learning as I always have. So education's just kind of in my bones. It's who I am. And always when you have to teach, you have to learn. The setup in advance is to know something novel in order to share it meaningfully. So for me, this was just the next extension of an opportunity to educate, but also to learn. And to be able to do it with you is like a really cool gig.
That's exciting. I think that for me, the challenge, taking on new challenges in life, I think that you grow personally sometimes by stepping out of your comfort zone and doing something that you never thought you would ever do. And I think this represents something for me. A lot of listeners may not know, but back in elementary school, I had a terrible fear of public speaking. I actually, in fifth grade, told my teacher, just give me a zero. I don't want to get up and give this book report presentation. Just give me a zero. I'll take it. And I think I've come a long way. And this represents that evolution of taking on new challenges and growing as a person.
I think that's awesome. Yeah, I think if we all look back and reflect on our lives and, you know, all the struggles we've, you know, overcome, really to get where we are, we're all just human in the end. And we all have our own internal, you know, hurdles we've gotten through. And that's actually really neat to hear. I didn't know that about you.
One of the things that we want to do with this podcast is actually reach dermatologists and beyond in the healthcare community. What are some of the things you're hoping that we are going to be able to do with this show?
Exactly that. I want to reach people that are touching patients' lives in the world of dermatology. I want to hope that we leave every listener, every podcast with at least a couple things that they're actually going to take with them, digesting the, you know, onslaught, if you will, of novel information that's always coming our way about therapeutics or diagnostics, things within dermatology that are really meaningful to our patients, but are just so difficult to digest necessarily into a meaningful form that you can take into the office. So I'm hoping that this ABCs, as we say, is really back to basics. And I don't mean infantile dermatology. I really mean the basics of what becomes most useful on the ground level for our listeners. Taking that which is novel and seemingly sometimes difficult to understand and you know, pulling it in altogether for a useful format.
I think that's really important. There's always new novel things coming in dermatology, and breaking down those concepts, whether it's a new medicine, whether it's new guidelines, whether it's new diagnostic bedside test, there are a lot of ways in which we can convey that new information to our colleagues. And we're going to do it in a fun, creative way. Yeah. And I really look forward. Also, we're going to have some special guests throughout the course of the show. And what are your thoughts about some of the guests that we might have?
Yeah, no, I'm excited. We're going to bring in guests from other fields. You know, dermatology is one of those medical specialties that I truly fell in love with for so many reasons, but one of which was it touches really every component of human disease. So from women's health to infectious diseases and oncology and genodermatoses with genetic disorders, the sort of breadth of what we get to do as dermatologists, but also those other specialists that we get to intersect with, the specialties we get to intersect with. So bringing in specialists from other fields that are going to help make dermatology better, make our listeners better, is exciting to me.
You already used such a big word, genodermatosis. Turns out you and I actually were principal investigators in a clinical trial together, the congenital ichthyosis trial that was led
by Kemmer. Yeah.
And that was a really fun trial, even though the drug itself was not FDA approved from the phase 3 results. It was so rewarding working with the children and the adults that were suffering from ichthyosis. Was that your experience?
It was. And actually, I was surprised. I was very surprised that they didn't take that study to the next level, because to me, just experientially in the office, the impact that the topical isotretinoin did have in patients that were getting drug ultimately was remarkable. Apparently, the delta wasn't statistically significant, and that held them back. But I think there's a big future, a really big future, and we're seeing this in other genetic diseases. And that's food for thought for another podcast of ours. What's coming up the ranks for genodermatoses in dermatology? It's a component of our subspecialty that has, I think, unfortunately been tremendously neglected over time and really, really can be so meaningful to the patients that struggle.
Well, I look forward to talking more about those in future shows. There's things from porphyrias to dermatomyositis, and even that story with ichthyosis patients, it's not over yet. So I'm really excited about being able to dive into some of the areas that maybe don't get talked about as much in dermatology. Let's explain ABCs in dermatology. Where did this name come from and what does it mean? Because it's so important for our listeners to actually know what ABCs in dermatology stands for.
Yeah. So as I suggested, ABCs in dermatology came from the back to basics. Like, this is fundamentally important to our listeners. We want to present information that's going to be something that's tangible. But actually, ABCs in dermatology, I was, after Mel came to me and said, hey, would you be interested in doing this? I sort of jovially thought, hey, that's cool. Ackerman-Bunick Conversations in Dermatology, ABCs D. And I guess it just stuck. So that's where it actually came from. But I think that organically, it carries the sentiment that we're looking to do is just take things back to a place that's a usable format.
There you go, folks. Ackerman-Bunick Conversations in Dermatology, the hot new show that's going to take over dermatology.
Cheers.
Cheers to that.
So, all right. Well, I want to ask you a couple questions. What was your initial reaction when you were first approached about this? What were your thoughts?
Well, I was really excited. Number one, to get to work with someone as knowledgeable, esteemed, and experienced, and just really a vanguard in the specialty, to get to work with someone like you is a no-brainer. And to be able to educate colleagues, patients in a different way than I'd done before, I really welcome the challenge. And I always tell people, I don't drink coffee, I drink science. And for me, science has many forms, and this is just one way to drink more science and educate in dermatology.
I love that. But I do drink coffee. In fact, I depend upon it. Okay. why do you think that this platform that we're utilizing is really urgent in this moment?
There seems to be a proliferation amongst both young and older individuals of listening to podcasts. You're taking that short car ride and people want to listen to interesting conversations. They want to be stimulated. They want to be their minds to be pushed to think in new ways. And that's what I really hope that we're able to do here is stimulate really good thought, but do it in a data-driven, fact-driven way.
So I'm going to ask you, as we're getting to know each other and our audience is getting to know us, what drew you to dermatology in the first place, Chris?
There's a number of ways to answer this. It turns out my PhD research was in nucleotide excision repair, DNA damage and repair. And that particular condition that can arise from nucleotide excision repair defects, I was studying a particular protein called XPC, Xeroderma Pigmentosum Group C protein.
How convenient.
So I did a lot of the structural biology behind that, yeah. And I was exposed to some of the effects that mutations in XPC could have, which could include non-melanoma skin cancers. And that initially got me exposed to dermatology. But there was a really interesting experience that I went through, and I bet everybody in dermatology has a story like this. I was on my medicine rotation in medical school, and there were two residents sitting in front of me. One of the medicine residents turned to the other and said, "Oh, I hate medicine. I should have gone into dermatology." And the other said, "Oh, I hate medicine. I should have gone into radiology." And I'm sitting there as a young, impressionable medical student saying, "These guys are not very happy. I'm going to do a rotation in dermatology and a rotation in radiology." And I did exactly that. And I couldn't see myself sitting in a dark room my whole life. So I said, "I'm going to choose dermatology. I got the research background." And the irony behind all of this is my first year of med school, when we had a very short, I think 1 week dermatology crash course, I thought it was the grossest thing in the world. And I swore to myself I would never do dermatology.
Oh my goodness.
I don't think many people know this story, but I actually, after first year of med school, swore I would never do dermatology. Too gross.
Oh,
and
my
look
gosh.
At where I am now.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's a story. Oh my gosh. I'm glad you're willing to share that. That's kind of interesting. And so then what drew you back when you were going through your rotations? Was it the more formalized rotation in your third or fourth year? That
I actually decided on dermatology very late. Probably like the day before I had to decide what I wanted to do in fourth year of medical school. And it was a rotation. So at Vanderbilt University, a medical school where I was doing my medical school, and I had my rotation with a very visionary, inspiring, passionate mentor. His name is Dr. John Zick. So I'll give him a shout out. I've done it many times before. But his passion for education, his passion for dermatology patients, particularly in his expertise of cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, I just was mesmerized by how this man loved his job. And I thought that if I could have even half of what he had, that I would be a very happy person. Mm-hmm. And I do think that having the right mentors or people in your life to help shape and guide you makes a big difference. And his impression upon me was one where I can do dermatology. I can make a difference. I didn't know what my difference would be back then. Still not sure what my difference might be going forward. At least this
I'll be happy to tell you after the podcast.
So I'm really thankful to having a series of really great mentors. He's certainly not the only mentor in my career path, but one that made a huge decision, helped me make a huge decision to go into dermatology.
Yeah, that's a great story, actually. For me, it was a little bit different. You know, I went through medical school. Before medical school, I was also involved in research as an undergrad at University of Pennsylvania. And I was assigned to the dermatology clinic. I actually had kind of an option of breast oncology or cutaneous oncology. And I took the gig with the cutaneous oncology department. So at Penn, I was exposed for about 2.5 years on this project, the molecular epidemiology of melanoma susceptibility. And I carried the project through for 2.5 years. And I was in the derm clinic basically every Monday morning and working with many of them. And they knew I was interested in medicine. And so they'd pull me into clinical rooms when it was relevant. So I had this like baseline knowledge that, hey, derm kind of seems interesting in my pre-med, you know, career, but had no idea. Got to medical school and kind of fell in love with everything. It was like the problem part of, I loved family medicine. I loved internal medicine. I loved surgery. I wasn't a huge fan of I think psychiatry and ophthalmology. Anyway, the physics of ophthalmology had me. But it was really a challenging decision. And yet I held on to this love of what I had remembered from undergrad being in the dermatology clinic and the human connection you had with people, that you were all focused on the same thing that was right there before your eyes. And we all knew what the problem was. We could see it. We could feel it. And, as I moved on and on, I kind of thought, well, I don't want to miss the complexity of medicine. I don't want to miss the dexterity of surgery. I don't want to miss seeing children and adults. I don't want to miss touching every, again, component of human disease, infectious disease, malignancy, nutritional disorders, the very acute problem and the very chronic disease, treating patients in the inpatient and outpatient setting, all of those things. So I fell into dermatology, actually, I think, because I loved so much about medicine. And holy cow, would never want to look back. I mean, it's been just an unbelievable dream of a career for me. I kind of sometimes pinch myself and say, wow, I'm just so unbelievably fortunate. And that's not to say that we don't have tough days and that life isn't hard and that reimbursements are failing and all of those things. But in the end, when I step back and try to look at my life and what I get to do every day from 30,000 feet, it's really been a dream come true.
And the best part is that dream's still in its beginning. You have such a long, amazing career ahead of you. You have two or three more careers, all of that wonderful dreaming and success and making a difference in patients' lives. I like what you said about the breadth of dermatology. That is, for our young listeners out there that are maybe in residency or medical school or residency thinking about dermatology, I think what you described about the breadth of what we get to do, there is so much in our specialty. You cannot be bored in dermatology, from all the medical aspects to all the aesthetic aspects. And actually, those are integrating more than ever now as we have more advanced therapies on the medical side. We're actually getting patients to the point where they're now coming back and saying, now that my disease is better, what do I do about these sequelae, these cosmetic or aesthetic effects? And I think that that's in a really cool place where our specialty is headed, is integrating these advanced therapeutics with some of the advanced aesthetics and from the molecules to the lasers. We're really in an interesting era.
There is no end to our specialty. It's like every time we think we've hit, you know, this threshold, there's just like this whole other open-ended, avenue that we're pursuing. And I have to say, I am overwhelmed with gratitude for industry coming to the table and taking our medical dermatology diseases seriously. You know, when you and I trained, and I think I'm ahead of you by maybe a year or two, but we had like three biologics that were injectable for the treatment of psoriasis. One, we rarely use for psoriasis anymore. Two are off the market. And you look at this evolution of real science translating into bedside care and transforming patients' lives. It may be among the greatest greatest sort of human experiments in what science and evolutionary interventions can do for a disease state that we've ever seen in dermatology. And so being a part of this and having the attention on medical derm, which you say I have multiple careers ahead of me, that's a big lift. But I will say that if I look at this as though this has been the first half of my career and I have the back half to yet fulfill, I am really, really hopeful. And one of my main missions in the legacy that I want to leave behind is to give a tremendous amount of visibility to medical dermatology so as to change the public perception of what we do and who we serve, destigmatize these diseases so patients don't have to feel so alone and lost, in many ways, change the opinion of all the people that make the rules we have to play by, the legislators, the payers that don't have a clue, and really show how skin is this incredible window into hidden internal pathology, that we've glamorized the aesthetic aspect of dermatology so much, and there's room for everybody, but we may have done so at the expense of really showing how cool the skin is and how much it can tell us about other things. And now bringing those two sort of almost polar opposite aspects of our specialty together and elevating the both, how amazing is that, right?
I think that's a tremendous legacy and one that absolutely you're doing now and will continue to do. And I think for me, the type of legacy that I want to bring is all the science that I'm doing at the molecular level is making sure that we as the clinicians are empowered with the knowledge about how the medicines we use work, how the diseases we're treating truly are driven, and how those therapies can intervene at the pathophysiological, the biochemical level. Having that knowledge is really important as we move forward with more and more medicines. You have to be able to have that molecular differentiation. You have to be able to understand how you're treating your patients. And a great example that I always take back is I believe in the motto, you treat your patients as if they are your family. If you're stuck trying to make a decision how to treat your patient, what would I do if this was my family member? If you were in with a family member talking to a doctor, let's say that you were in with a family member who had a cancer, and you were talking to the doctor, and the doctor was prescribing a medicine, and you ask the doctor, well, how does the medicine work? And they can't answer the question. Or why are you choosing this medicine versus the other one? And they can't answer. That has a huge impact on the patient and the patient's family. It takes away the feeling of hope and confidence. It questions whether or not, is this the right person? Do they know what they're doing? And I think that as a whole, we want to give hope, optimism, and inspire our patients that we have the confidence and the knowledge to actually make the best decisions for them. Patients come to us trusting their health and their lives with us. And I think it's really important that we continue to learn. Dermatology, all of medicine actually, is lifelong learning. And I really believe that the learning we do should ultimately be to make sure we really are making the right decisions in the best interest of our patients. If you always put the patient at the center, you rarely can go wrong. And you know, I think back to when I was a young kid, we were talking about how we got inspired into dermatology. When I was a young kid, you know, at first I wanted to be, you know, right when the movie Top Gun came out, I wanted to be a Top Gun pilot, but that didn't work out. So then I liked the ER show. You know, I was really drawn to, actually, it wasn't George Clooney on the ER show. It was actually Rocket Romano. I loved his bravado, his confidence. I really liked Rocket Romano, but then he lost his arm in one of the episodes and his character kind of went downhill after that. But I really was drawn to be an ER doctor or a trauma physician. There was something about the adrenaline rush, the ability to help a patient when they are in their most vulnerable need and to be able to save them and bring them back and give them new life. But then when I actually did my trauma rotation at Vanderbilt, while it was exhilarating, I found that I love surgery. Maybe a lot of colleagues don't know this, but I really do love surgery. I don't do Mohs, but I do all non-Mohs surgical procedures. And I really just find it cathartic in some way to be able to cure a skin cancer, to be able to do a surgery, to leave patients with a great outcome. And so for me, I loved my plastics rotation. I loved doing all the surgeries on trauma. And for me, having that procedural intervention was something that I wanted in my career because it gave the sense of instant satisfaction to myself, but also to the patient. You've done something. And I think that's where a lot of the patients, whether it's the new advanced therapies that are clearing their psoriasis to PASI 100, or whether it's these new lasers that make you look 20 years younger, the reality is you're giving instant results to patients now. Maybe not instant, but giving real results that they see in the mirror. They go home. They don't have to wait 5 years. They're seeing it within weeks. And that is changing how we work. And as you said, the skin is the largest organ of the body. I think we're biased. It's probably the most important organ of the body.
Yeah, I'm not going to even say probably. I'm okay to be biased in that regard. I love what you were saying about the acuity of dermatology. And, you know, like I said a moment ago, I've spent the first half of my career sort of building this message that the skin is just such an incredible organ system that can tell us so much about what is going on inside the body. And so within dermatology, I still exploit that. You know, doing the hospital work we do, being called to the ICU, and you see a 19-year-old with purpura on his face, and he's fallen into a coma in the past 4 hours, sick as you know what, and formerly a totally healthy kid, young man. And being able to look at that man from 15 feet away and say, oh my gosh, this is purpura fulminans. He has streptococcal sepsis, phoresis, high-dose IV antibiotics. And a couple days later, the kid is, you know, saying his name. A couple days after that, eating a sandwich. Dermatology really does have so much to offer any of us, all of us, and every compartment that we want to work within, whether it's surgery, and I also enjoy surgery and do that as well, all non-Mohs cases of my own, as well as I still enjoy the adrenaline rush you mentioned. So, by the way, that is episode 8 in season 1 for Skintelligent, the medical docuseries that I've hosted. Now, I'd love for you, I've talked a little bit about my background in bringing Skintelligent to life. Can you tell me a little bit about your lab? I think this is something that's just incredibly important for people to understand as you talk about the molecular pathology of diseases, you know, understanding where diseases come from. And frankly, I loved how you alluded to translating that into something that actually means something to the patient and their family, because that is indeed what differentiates us from all others. As dermatology specialists, recognizing that we know, we understand the pathways because we know the human biology, physiology, and where the defects lie and how we can intercept those defects and intervene for patients to get better outcomes. It's what differentiates from AI. It's what differentiates us from their primary care. It's what differentiates us, frankly, from non-physician providers in many ways. So tell me a little bit about your lab and what you have been working on and what you look forward to working on in the future.
Where did my lab come from? My passion for molecular thinking and for structural biology, biochemistry, really started probably in junior high school. For those that don't know, I actually did my junior high school science fair project on simulating the microgravity of space here on Earth to grow better protein crystals. So I was doing protein crystals.
Oh, I was doing that too, for sure. Or not.
Junior high school science fair. When, for all our really young listeners out there, or for all of our colleagues that have school-age children that are entering the science fair, sometimes the science fair actually does shape your career. And in that case, it did for me. It, with a little bit of background, turns out my father was an X-ray crystallographer. There's a biochemistry textbook a lot of people may know. It's the Vote and Vote biochemistry textbook. It's written by actually a professor from Pennsylvania, right? Where you were.
Yeah.
Don Vogt and his wife wrote this Vote and Vote biochemistry textbook. My father was Don Vogt's first graduate student and was in structural biology before he went down to Oak Ridge National Laboratory, where he did a lot of his, spent his career doing X-ray crystallography as well as some neutron crystallography. And as a young kid, my father was involved in the NASA space program. Turns out that NASA has a protein crystallography program where they would send experiments up into the Mir, as well as now the International Space Station. And my father was a part of this program. And as a kid, I'm thinking space, alien, science, right? In that order. And how cooler could it get than to do science in space? And actually got to work in my father's lab a couple summers, got to help prepare experiments that went up into space, got to hold these what are called DCAMs, diffusion-controlled apparatuses for microgravity that had been on the Mir or International Space Station. And it really was an immersion in science. And that got my brain going. I was in a molecular world, but I also was in a medical world. My mom was a clinical endocrinologist trained in Philadelphia, and was an endocrinologist for 35 years. She's retired now, but she was that type of clinician where wherever I went in my hometown of Oak Ridge, Tennessee, oh, your mom is just the best. Oh, I saw your mom. Oh, your mom is the most wonderful doctor. I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't even step onto the soccer field without someone telling me how great my mom was as a physician. And then you had my father as a crystallographer. And every night at dinner, it was hearing science, or is hearing about hormones, growth hormone, testosterone, diabetes. I was hearing it all every night at the dinner table. And I don't always fully understand even how my brain works, but that molecular connection between what my father did and the medical needing to touch and heal and empathize with patients that my mom is so special at doing, it just was something that came natural to me to bridge both worlds. And what I try to do in my lab is to really investigate at that molecular level how things work at the atom and bond level. But I think about it as, well, how does this knowledge at the atom and bond level translate to making this patient better? And that's what my lab is doing. Some of the most exciting projects that we're working on, all of them are exciting, I should say that. But we actually are doing a breast cancer project where our research on keratins, right? We think keratins are everywhere in dermatology, hair, skin barrier, nails. It's all about keratin. And our lab has done the most keratin structures, almost 80% of all keratin structures that have ever been determined in the world. So our lab is a keratin expertise lab. But what we found, a colleague in California found that keratin 1 is upregulated on the cell surface of triple negative breast cancer. And now research in a dermatology space is bleeding over to doing research into new therapeutics that might be used to treat triple negative breast cancer.
I know we talk about, and I mentioned, right? It's skin is the organ system that interplays with every other organ system in the body. And I really want to give exposure to that because it's not just about the fact that skin can manifest diseases within infectious disease or oncology or, you know, inflammatory bowel disease has overlap with obviously some very significant skin disorders. You mentioned it's our largest organ, but it's our most, not just visible, it's our most accessible organ. Of all organ systems, we can access skin and use it as a resource in so many ways. And wow, what an incredibly cool thing you're doing with the keratins and looking at triple negative breast cancer. But it's another perfect example of where molecular physiology, molecular biology comes into play from skin primarily, and, you know, expanding into other avenues, other organ systems and other disease disease segments.
So, Lindsay, what is something about you that you want our colleagues to know that they may not know? Something unique that you probably haven't told people before?
For those that don't know me, I love basketball. I have a mean basketball game. So if you ever want to pick up, we're walking by the court and you want to have a little pickup shootout, I'm more than happy. Always game for that. I have a wife and three children. We have a son who's 13 years old and two twin girls that are 10. They're the love of my life. I am so fortunate to have healthy parents that are very involved in our life. I love my life. Not every day is a great day. I mean, we certainly have our hardships and, Lord knows, even just airline travel getting here, right? But I think it's immensely important. And one of, I think, the foundational ways I like to carry on in my head. And again, I think all of us are still figuring out, not just you, how to organize your thoughts or how to figure out how your head thinks. But one of the things I have found to be so foundationally important to my happiness in my life is gratitude. And I really have a tremendous amount of gratitude for the life that I'm living outside of dermatology, but also the life I'm living every day within dermatology. I see it as an incredible privilege, a real responsibility, but one with comes with vigor and earnestness and authenticity that I want to take on, and one that looks at a future that is just so incredibly, incredibly bright. Like I said, so grateful for all of the interest in all of the science behind what we're doing to make medicine better for the patients that are struggling with our most vulnerable diseases. I say not infrequently that within dermatology, we have the opportunity to not just treat a disease, we treat a person, but we can change the trajectory of a life. And to think about that, to take a young person who might be dealing with severe hidradenitis suppurativa, whose life has quite literally been sidelined, and having options to treat them that take them away from, the stigma, the fear of odor, the fear of, pain or a flare, not participating in school, not participating in extracurricular activities, not living any part of the life that they would otherwise want in those critical years where HS tends to afflict these vulnerable young girls and boys, and quite literally being able to take that away from them, allow them to thrive in school and relationships and get a job and, pursue the extracurricular activities they want. I mean, I look at what we do as just this immense, immense, immense privilege.
I agree. It is an incredible privilege to when people let you in to care for them, they trust you with their life, literally. It's incredibly humbling, and we have to take that responsibility seriously. And I think that's where medical education comes in. But I've also found, for me personally, humor. They say that how much you smile and how much you laugh every day can be healing. And I do believe that. And I think that's part of the gratitude, the emotional, having the emotional happiness day to day in our field, being grateful for our colleagues, our coworkers, grateful for, that patient that comes in, that as you're walking out the door after doing a total body skin exam, after doing three biopsies, after writing a couple scripts, oh, by the way, I'm having hair loss, or by the way, I forgot to mention this, understanding that to them, you in a way are a hero. You're helping get their life back on track. And I always try to remember when I'm seeing patients, we all have, as clinicians, we all have all these things going on in our life. As we're working throughout the day, we're thinking about our family, other things, responsibilities we have outside of that clinic. So are the patients. The patients have 5 to 10 different things that are going on in their life that they haven't told you. And I do think, for me, stepping back and always remembering, I don't always know what's going on 100% in the patient's lives, because they don't always tell you everything. But just knowing that going the extra mile for every patient can make a difference, even though you don't know what that difference is.
Yeah.
And I do think that that's something that I try to do, is always remember I can make a difference for them. I don't always have to know what that is. Just treat them as if they're my own family member, and they will, I think, over the long haul, you'll make a huge difference. And I really like the word you used, authenticity. And I think that's exactly what we're going to bring here in ABCs and dermatology, is authenticity and not being afraid to to really talk about how we can make a difference in patients' lives.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris. I think that's awesome. Yeah. I'll say just to conclude, and this may get cut, I don't know, but when I was in medical school, there was a course our first year called SBS, Social and Behavioral Sciences. And as a true, you know, physical science nerd, I thought SBS was kind of a BSBS. I was like, why are we sitting here learning how to, you know, smile at patients and shake their hand and acknowledge them? And I will tell you, the most fulfilling part of my day, every day, as much as I absolutely embrace and love the science, and in my head, I'm excited about it, the most fulfilling part of my day is hugging a patient, shaking their hand, putting my hands on their knees and looking up at them, giving them that sort of elevated sense of power as they look down at me and we're just staring into each other's eyes. Those are the most fulfilling moments. And I don't want our listeners amidst the, you know, morass of crazy that some days are filled with, like you say, that patient who might just ask about hair loss at the end of a very long visit, or, you know, thinking about the third prior authorization denial that you're appealing. Just touch people, look at people, hold people. We are in this incredible, incredible opportunity. We're all here for a reason. We all got here for a reason. And it's just something really important that I don't want our listeners to lose sight of.
I really like hearing that you like to hug patients or be with them and not afraid to show that emotion or even use touch. I remember when I was in physical diagnosis course in medical school, but also it was a very passionate OB professor at Vanderbilt who really imparted on me that in the right way, touching or holding a patient, hugging a patient in the right way can be incredibly healing and cathartic in many ways. And using that in the right way in an exam, of course, not every patient will want that or respond to it, but there are many who do. And I think of a dear patient recently, and this is like in the last month, a woman who had been diagnosed with cancer, and she started crying when I walked in the room. And I was like, what did I do? I just walked in. Yeah. But the reality was she was sad because she thought it was the last time she was going to get to see me. And
pause just right there for 1 second. Isn't that pretty amazing that someone that, you know, is, again, it's almost, you know, mundane to us that we walk into another room and you walk into another room and you walk into another room. But patients actually are vulnerable. They actually look at us to come save the day. They look at us and respect us and want from us something that no one else can give them, a sense of safety potentially. And the fact that she connected with you in that way, that she was crying because she thought it was going to be the last time she saw you, that's just worth a pause.
It was very meaningful. Of course, took a moment, hugged her. Her husband was with her in the room, and she went on to try to make sure that I took care of her husband and was there for her husband when she was gone. And we had a little reset. We talked through it. I certainly did what I needed to do dermatology-wise to take care of her. But at the same time, that visit was a personal visit.
Yeah.
It was one in which you connected with the patient. And this is, to me, this is that doctor-patient relationship. We talk about shared decision-making, but this is beyond that. This is the connection human to human. We have to remember sometimes in that room, you just have to be human. You just have to have a heart. And that is something that I really like doing, is showing off my sensitive side. I think that it comes from watching too many Hallmark movies. I definitely am a Hallmark movie guy, and I let that into my clinic sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you started off this podcast by asking me, why did I decide to do this? And my immediate answer was, because you're kind, and you always have something meaningful to share. But that kind piece really always comes across, whether you are trying to show your sensitive side or not. You've got everything inside of you that any patient would ever want. The science, the background, the, you know, the knowledge base, but the human side of you, Chris, it's really phenomenal. It's a privilege to be here doing this with you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. And it's a privilege to be here with you. And I know that one of the things that's always really impressed me about you is, and maybe our colleagues don't know this, the number of clinical trials you run, the number of patients that you are helping from diverse genodermatoses like ichthyosis, all the way to HS, as you were just talking about. And I really look up to that. I think that clinical trials are becoming harder and harder to recruit for in many ways. And the number of trials that are coming up in the rare genetic space, rare disease space, we need people that are willing to take on those trials, recruit those patients, care for them, because it's time, as psoriasis, atopic dermatitis, HS, as some of the big diseases get more and more medicines, we're seeing now that innovation. We are in an incredible innovative era of dermatology. It is spilling over into all the diseases. And this is a wonderful opportunity for people that just have that heart for all types of patients to be able to make a difference. And I love how you're making a difference in dermatology.
Thank you. I'll tell you that, being a part of, anything that you do that, you think you know what you're doing and you start something, at the time that might be, again, jumping over a hurdle or novel. And it's been incredibly, incredibly fun to, establish and run this clinical research unit that's become quite large at our site. But the coolest thing is, you don't realize until you're, I think, more well into it, how grateful the patients are too. I generally make a habit of thanking them at the end of a visit for, again, thanks so much for being here. I know these visits are long, but I would certainly hope that you're finding it worthwhile. And they're like, and I don't know if this is going to work for me, but I'm happy to do it because, hopefully this will work for someone someday. And what a nice view and scope into the lens of humanity that patients are still willing to give us so much of themselves in order to make the future better for others. So I love the research unit has been incredibly fun and very rewarding in that regard too.
So as we wrap up this introductory podcast to this amazing ABCs in Dermatology show that we now have together, Lindsay, what are some of the topics or questions that you're most eager to dig into as we get into the future?
Well, we've touched a bit on it, novel therapeutics for disease states that I think have been otherwise ignored. I'm very excited for what the future looks like for things that we still, to this day, have zero FDA-approved therapies, lichen sclerosis, pyoderma gangrenosum, lichen planopilaris, diseases and disorders that really do have a tremendous impact on patients' lives, functional parts of their lives, emotional parts of their lives, physical parts of their lives. Dermatology is an incredibly experiential field of medicine, whether that's pain, pruritus, stigmatization with the emotional impact. It is an experiential disease, whatever your patient is going through. And to have had so many diseases that were inadequately addressed, inadequately treated for so long, and seeing that transformation, as you say, we're in this innovation era, that excites me tremendously about the future. Yeah, I look forward to talking to you about it.
Oh, I look forward to talking to you about all aspects of dermatology. And I do think that one of the things I'm really hoping that we're going to be able to bring to our listeners is not shy away from some of the controversial topics. And controversy, not in a bad way, but in, hey, how do we do this? How do we understand this? How do we think through this complicated scenario? How are we going to translate this question to practice? Those are the types of things that we want to do. Could be, you mentioned earlier, women's health. I had a wonderful role in talking about breast cancer and the role of the dermatologist in breast cancer last year. And I think that these are types of things that we don't think about, but really dermatologists are on the front line of caring for women with breast cancer and maybe some men as well. But these are the types of topics I hope we can dive into in the future. And we're going to. And I'm really excited to have you here on the show as a partner with me, Lindsay.
Thank you so much, Chris. This has been awesome.